Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Brady, a.k.a. The Real Slim Brady, a.k.a. Smarky Smark, the leader of the Wrestling Casuals bunch. And we're going to be talking about Monday Night Raw, the August 29th edition, the last wrestling show before I go back to school. And side note here, I may have to change the schedule of the podcast and revert it to a weekly show where I talk about Raw, SmackDown, and any NXT news and stuff like that in a single episode, which will lead to a longer episode that will occur later in the week, possibly on Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. I'm not sure how the school schedule is going to work out. I work on Fridays and Saturdays as well, so that makes a big difference as well. I'm not really sure where any of this is going to land. Going to school Monday through Thursday, taking maximum credits, that's going to take so much time. And maybe I'll be able to record on Thursday night and get it out on Friday, but it's possible that I'll have to record Friday morning. And who knows, depending on how long it takes to get it out, sometimes it takes me a really long time to get it done. Recording is hard, especially when you're as compulsive as I am and you can't stand the sound of your own voice. Recording takes a while, and it might not even be out till Saturday. I'm going to really have to experience the school week before I'm really sure what's going to go on. You're going to get a SmackDown episode this week, and I'll update you on what's going on there. But without further ado, let's not talk about stuff that I don't really know the conclusion of yet. Let's talk about Monday Night Raw, something that I really don't know the conclusion of yet. By which I mean, where is Raw going? This is a real monkey wrench in everything that they were doing. It's really a big surprise. They're being spontaneous. They bring back Triple H. We have a new champion, Kevin Owens. Somebody who not many people expected. I called it. Check my Facebook. I did call it. A lot of people thought it was either going to be Roman or Seth. I said, fuck that, it's going to be Kevin Owens. I got a picture of Kevin Owens with a Mickey Mouse hat, posted on my Facebook and said, this is going to be your next Universal Champion. And I stood by that, and the second it happened, I was freaking the frick out. And they could not have done it any more perfectly. So I guess we can go with the current formula where I talk about the main event, and then I go back and talk about the rest of the show. I think that seems to be a decent way to do this, not keep you waiting on the stuff that you really want me to talk about, and you can choose whether or not you want to stick around for the rest. And there still is some decent stuff to stick around for this time, which is really nice. So Roman Reigns versus Seth Rollins versus Kevin Owens versus Big Cass, they changed this and made it into an elimination style match, which was the best way to do it. There's a lot more drama in eliminating individuals. Taking out Big Cass early after he takes a hell of a beating and shows that he really does belong with these guys. He seemed like he fit in after a while. At first, it seemed like, what is Big Cass doing here? He was kind of just shoehorned into this match. But it seems like it works. He seems confident enough, at least in the ring. He's not diverse or anything like that, but he fits in the same way that Diesel kind of fit into the main event scene back in the day. He fits in the same way that any big guy kind of fits in. The one difference is he's surprisingly young to be put into the main event scene. But this is just to give him a little bit of rub up against some guys who are actual main eventers to build him up even bigger. And now when he goes back down to the tag division, he's going to bring the entire division up along with him having had this match. I really think that's great for everybody involved. I like that Enzo came out and did his shtick before leaving. He comes out and my name is Enzo Amore and this is Big Cass. And Cass is like, I'm going to win this. I'm going to surprise everybody and stuff like that. I think that's cool. And I liked Enzo. He was like encouraging him and then he ran out. And it made me want the moment where Big Cass wins. And then Enzo runs down the ramp to celebrate with him, runs into his arms, just hugs him. And they have a nice little bro moment. They have a nice little bro embrace where they're so happy for, well, Enzo is so happy for his friend, and I would like that moment. Enzo is not the character who would get jealous of Big Cass, at least he's never been written that way, so I'd imagine he would come out and say, I am so proud, I'm so happy for you, man, this is the coolest moment for me. Like, I am not the champion here, but this is really the next best thing, seeing my big buddy holding the belt. And I think that would be really cool. And this moment made me want to see that, which is good. I don't know if that was real. I assume that was their intention to make me imagine a moment similar to that with these two celebrating over the belt. But that's not going to happen, at least not yet. And I think one day I would feel comfortable calling Big Cass the champion. He's not an amazing wrestler, but there was some decent storytelling while he was in the match. I would say they really kicked it up a notch when he was out, but at the same time, he took some good damage. He sold everything fairly well, and he did a good job. He did a much better job than a lot of people thought he would do. He gets eliminated by Kevin Owens' frog splash. I'm so glad that they're finally giving that frog splash a little bit more, because it's a really good move. Kevin Owens does it well. And a frog splash being done by somebody Kevin Owens' size, done to such perfection, should be a finisher. It should be finisher worthy. And I'm glad that it finished Big Cass. I would be even more glad if this is an indication of that move being powered up a little bit more, being kind of like a secondary finisher to Kevin Owens. Maybe it can beat people. Maybe it can beat people in some of the lesser matches. Kevin Owens has been breaking out a lot of different moves lately, and I like that. A lot of different moves to finish people off. He did that little swinging neck breaker thing, that little torture rack neck breaker thing recently. I think that's cool. There's a great variety going on with Kevin Owens, and I think that's great going into his championship run. They're really starting to expand upon him. I looked away for a minute, and I thought Kevin Owens was eliminated, and I was really disappointed. And then he came back, and then he won the whole thing, and I was so happy. Oh my God. So happy. So Kevin Owens, my best friend, is now the Universal Champion, the top guy, with shenanigans. Shenanigans out the ass in this pay-per-view quality match. And side note, I think we're going to get more of these pay-per-view quality matches on the regular shows during the months where that show does not have a pay-per-view. Since they have the split brand pay-per-views coming up, they're going to have SmackDown doing Backlash. They'll have Raw doing Clash of Champions. What is Raw going to do throughout that month? They're not just going to give us all this casual content. Every now and then, they'll be giving us some significant updates because we have to wait a little bit longer for their pay-per-view. So maybe once a month, we'll be getting a pay-per-view quality match on a regular show. And this seemed to be that one. I don't know if they'd originally planned to have any sort of pay-per-view quality match. If the Universal Championship wasn't involved, would they be having this? I don't know, but I think they really should throw in these since Raw isn't having a pay-per-view for a little bit. SmackDown has the pay-per-view coming up. I really think it would be really good to throw the fans a bone, I guess, in a sense, because you're not going to be getting these big matches with these guys on this brand for an extra month while these guys on the other brand are working towards their pay-per-view. So whatever, I get distracted way too quickly. Triple H comes out, pedigrees Roman in a perfect show of storytelling. Pedigrees Roman and has Rollins pick up the pin. And when I realize there's two heels left in the match, some shenanigans are about to go down. Something about that didn't seem right. We have a face turn going up, and for a second I was thinking, are they going to turn Kevin Owens into a face champion? Are they going to have him somehow overcome Triple H and Seth Rollins, then become the champion? I mean, WWE needs a top face, and we all know Kevin Owens was going to go on to face Finn Balor. That was going to happen. That was their plan going forward. So clearly they had a plan with Kevin Owens being in the main event scene. That's cool. But instead, we have Triple H pedigreeing Seth Rollins in the middle of the ring and letting Kevin Owens get the pinfall, raising his hand in the end, being like, good job, kid. And I think there was a genuine cool moment between Triple H and Kevin Owens. Triple H being the NXT guy and Kevin Owens being the guy who really legitimized NXT above anybody else. Kevin Owens probably did the most by beating John Cena while being the NXT champion. I think that was the biggest moment when it came to legitimizing NXT as a brand ever. So I think there was a genuine cool moment there between the two, and Kevin Owens is in the back taking pictures and he's looking all mean and stuff, and then they cut away and he's like, I gotta go call my wife. And I genuinely felt really good for Kevin Owens. This has to be the moment of his life. This is the moment. This is the greatest thing for him. And I am so excited for the guy because he seems like a genuinely cool dude. And I guess this is a decent way to segue into something that I wanted to talk about. I got into a little mini debate with somebody in a comment thread, and I know you're not supposed to do that. You don't get anything really good out of debating people in the comments. It's hard to articulate in the comments. A lot of people will just throw the most random things at you. They believe what they want right now. They believe the same thing they believe on Wednesday that they believed on Monday, no matter what happened Tuesday. So why even bother? But I've been commenting more and really having more back and forths with some people. And I want to talk about the nature of being a heel in modern day wrestling. So I was having a debate with some guy over the concept of heel dominant booking. And here's a big thing about this. The pure heel is a dead concept. We had pure heels in the past. These people are evil for the sake of being evil. There is no redeeming quality about them. You should hate them, hate them, hate them. They're just all bad. But that concept is dead. It doesn't work anymore. Cool heels have become so appealing today. Who knows where that started? We have so many people who could have started it. We have people like Rowdy Roddy Piper, who kind of bounced back and forth between being a heel and being a cool heel, which are two very different concepts. We have the heel who is willing to piss off the other heels, a character like Rowdy Roddy Piper. We have cool heels who are like the NWO, who some of the older audience can identify with because they're bad guys, but they're just so cool in the way they do things. And you wish you were that cool guy who could just go in, take over, and make yourself the boss in that situation. And today we have characters like Kevin Owens who have a little bit more gray area, and he's not necessarily the worst guy in the world. He seems to represent some decent things. His motivation seems somewhat noble. When he talks about his family, you believe it. When he talks about Sami Zayn and he says that he doesn't hate Sami Zayn, that he doesn't have a problem with Sami Zayn, he just doesn't want Sami Zayn getting between him and his success. You can kind of believe that, can't you? I mean, I personally do. I can identify way more with a character like Seth Rollins, with a character like Kevin Owens, than I can with a character like John Cena or Roman Reigns. And I'm not just trying to knock John Cena or Roman Reigns like any internet smark would. That's just a problem with the nature of those characters, because they have to be so squeaky clean, because WWE likes their squeaky clean faces. It becomes a little bit of an issue because it's hard to write for a character like that because they're not really that relatable. In the case of Roman Reigns, they tried to give him an edge. They tried to make him the funny guy. I come at you with the one-liners. Zing, zing, bada bing, I got you, I made fun of you and stuff. And I think their heart was in the right place there. But I just don't think it was done well. I don't think it was done creatively. And that was one of the biggest problems when it came to the Roman character and trying to put an edge on him, because Roman doesn't come off as natural. He has trouble portraying a natural character. In the case of John Cena, he's a little bit more natural, but he has even less of an edge than Roman does. He's even more squeaky clean. And then we have characters like Steve Austin. By all means, this character should be a heel. Everything he does. Why is he attacking his boss? I don't understand. At first, Mr. McMahon didn't really do anything to deserve it. It seemed like Stone Cold is really the one who struck first, the one who gave birth to the evil Vince McMahon. It was really all Stone Cold's fault from the beginning. But to a certain degree, you can relate to him, you can relate to his frustration. All this stuff is relatable. I think the relatability of characters is actually the one thing that is starting to kill the face and heel concepts, because they're not so black and white anymore. They're as gray as they have ever been, and I think that's better than having black and white characters. A lot of people may miss the black and white booking of the 80s, where we have evil people like Ted DiBiase. He's just like, he's all bad. He was supposed to be the all bad heel. He's really rich, and who doesn't want to hate on the super rich guy who flaunts his money in your face? Who doesn't? It's a simple character, but it was done to perfection in the time. But really, today, in a world where characters are becoming grittier, and in superhero films as well, I think there's so much to talk about when it comes to superhero films and wrestling, because I think the two have a lot in common. We have so many movies where the superhero, that person's morality is being questioned. Batman versus Superman. We have these characters who go after each other because they think that their brand of justice isn't the best. Because you know what? This is reality. There isn't just a good side and a bad side. There's so many shades of gray when it comes to good and bad. Is this a bad person doing good things? Is it a good person doing bad things? Is it a good person doing good things for bad reasons? There's so many dimensions to it. And I think the modern way of writing, not just booking, writing in general, has worked to make these gray areas shine a little bit more. To really draw attention to the fact that we're not as right, we're not as self-righteous as in the past we used to think we were. And overall, this is not exactly the nature of the conversation I had with the guy on YouTube. That's a deeper conversation that kind of evolved into something like this. This person was complaining about heel dominant booking, where people on the internet want the heels to win far more than the faces, where in the 80s, the biggest growth of professional wrestling, the heels always lost. The faces always win. They won for years and years and years, and they just celebrated at the top. I responded to this guy by talking about some booking that I personally just thought was better. I was citing the NWA booking style. And for those of you who don't know the difference between the NWA booking style and the WWF booking style, they are really different. One is face-centered and one is heel-centered. And they both have a way of getting around to their faces. One just puts them in a more prominent light and has us celebrate with them at the top of the mountain. We hang out up there and we do high fives. We beat the villain time and time and time again. That's the WWF booking style. And that's not necessarily wrong. It's whatever your preference is. But the current crop of fans would definitely have preferred the NWA booking style, because it was definitely more based on the struggle when it came to the faces. You would have your heels holding the belt, holding the top prize, and constantly finding ways to get out of being beaten by the faces. So it would be a struggle. You would start at the bottom of the mountain, and you'd have to climb up with these heels throwing rocks at you the whole time from the top. And it's a pain. It's terrible. It's hard. But the grind is what made the victories in the end so much more worth it. A good example of NWA-style booking is with the NWO of WCW, where Hogan was dominant for so long. But who comes along after a really long time, a very, very long build? Goldberg. And after having this heel at the top for so long, people really just flipped their shit when Goldberg finally got over. And of course, the booking is never really consistently NWA or WWF style. One tends to lead to the other eventually, except in the WWF and at certain points, it never really led to the heels getting over and having that big heel guy holding the belt for a significant amount of time. It would usually go back to somebody like Hogan fairly quickly. In the case of the NWA, they would have the heels holding it for a while, and then when the face got it, big, big moment, they wouldn't hold it for too long because that's when you wanted to build up the next big grind to the next belt. It's like a boss battle in a video game. The bigger, the more grand the villain is, the more satisfying it is when you finally dethrone them, which is definitely what people tend to prefer today when it comes to the smarky booking. I mean, the conversation didn't really end up going very far. The person ended up accusing me of, indirectly in a way, saying, all these smarks, and I guess lumping me in with them because I was trying to defend this, he was saying that they cheer the heels in order to prove how smart they are. But that's not really how it goes. The smarky fans like characters like Neville. They like characters like Sami Zayn. They're the ones who are really responsible for characters like Daniel Bryan getting off the ground in WWE to begin with. They love the faces. They just like certain faces over others. They prefer the NWA style booking. They like people who start off in the middle or at the bottom, and they love to see them grow a little bit more. They don't want to see somebody like Roman because he kind of just came in and was dominant the entire time. I mean, of course, there's always characters like Dean Ambrose and characters like Seth Rollins who can easily be lumped in with a character like Roman Reigns. Dean Ambrose, above all of them, had the biggest struggle, and I think that's why they were so behind him for so long. Currently, not as much, because I think they took a little bit too long to pull the trigger on the guy, and that tends to happen. If you don't get what you want after cheering for them for so long, the excitement can die down, you can lose hope. But there's also the case of Seth Rollins, who had a certain grind to him, where he really had an interesting story arc where he had to really go out of his way, really fuck around with his morality, don't sell out, buy in, all that stuff. He had a decent story arc to him, but when it came to Roman Reigns, he did it legit. He didn't have much grind. He just kind of did it. And you could talk about the psychology that goes into these characters' bookings for days and days and days, but I'm not going to go into that because it's just way too much. But when we're talking about people who prefer heel booking, another thing, and I think this can relate to tonight, especially to Seth Rollins, who may be a future face of the company at this point, we also like to cheer heel characters because heels are the characters that show the most personality. They show us their motivations. They show us everything that they're willing to do to accomplish this or that. And this comes from the reality era. This comes from the attitude era, mostly from characters like Austin who start off as heels, and then due to the crowd respecting what they do to get what they want, they end up becoming faces. And there's so many examples of characters like this. Shawn Michaels. Kevin Owens is definitely a good one because I know he'll be a face eventually. We have John Cena, because when he was a heel, he kind of got over despite the crowd booing him. He tried to get the crowd to boo him, but he was just so funny. He was so fun. Everything he did was great. We have characters like CM Punk for the Smarky Smarks out there. Like, he gets over as a heel, becomes a face. We make him into a face by cheering him. We cheer the heels in order because it's a message to WWE. We want to like this guy. And I think that's all the Smarks really want to do. They want to let the WWE know who we want to like. And they can try to prove us wrong. They can try to give us something else. Sometimes we don't know what we want. And I think that's kind of the beauty of wrestling. It's a really fun way of telling a story that the fans don't always know. And sometimes the management is able to outthink us. They can think 10 steps ahead of us, and it's kind of crazy. I could really just have this conversation forever. It's a lot to have on a single podcast, so I'm just going to drop it for now. I'm definitely going to talk about these concepts going forward, especially with the evolution of characters like Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins, which I will definitely be following closely. I almost did a Mario there by accident. Let's talk about the August 29th edition of Monday Night Raw. So they open up with the Universal Championship debate, apparently, because they're all just sitting in chairs being like, I will be the champion. I will be the champion. I will be the champion. Seth and Owens really own the segment, but Cass held his own very well as well. And Cass did this thing, and I was like, he didn't just say that, did he? And I assume this was him making a dick joke to Seth Rollins. Cass was like, despite what you've been telling yourself for years, size does matter. And that's my best big Cass impression. And as many of us know, many of us may or may not have seen, don't judge me, Seth Rollins, he had leaked nudes a while back. That's not PG. That's not PG at all. Cass, come on. And Seth Rollins freaked out about it, and that was great. Roman Reigns starts a brawl instead of talking, and that was probably smart. A lot of people have been wanting Roman Reigns to be a guy who speaks with his actions, not his words, and I think that's definitely good if they want to start booking in that direction. We have Neville versus Chris Jericho. Neville looks amazing. He should be a star, but he needs to be allowed to do something. Here's the thing. They want to talk about Neville. He's a serious thing. He's good and stuff, and he's a serious threat to you anytime you get in the ring, but they never let him win anything consequential. That's the problem. It's really annoying, because he loses with a lion tamer. Fuck the commentary team. You too, Corey Graves, because it was not the Walls of Jericho. It was a lion tamer. Anybody who knows wrestling knows the difference between a lion tamer and a Walls of Jericho. Fuck. I'm disappointed, because I thought when Corey Graves came up, the commentary would just get all better, but he's better for storytelling. They need somebody who actually knows the moves. That's why I wanted him to be working with Mauro Ranallo. We have a great storyteller and somebody who can call the match successfully, but we still have our commentary team split in a way that isn't quite as good as it could be. And that is a shame. So we have the Chris Jericho interview before the match, and it was hilarious because he's like, do you know what he's going to get? You know what he's going to get? And he's like, it? He's like, no, he's not going to get it, you stupid idiot. What does that even mean? And I think that was funny. Maybe he's dropping that gimmick and he was just going to get one last laugh out of it, which that's fine, I guess. The New Day meets Bayley. Dana Brooke comes out and belittles the person who just beat her last week, which, if you're going to do that, it just makes everybody look bad. Isn't that great? I want more New Day Bayley segments, and I'll tell you this much, I've been to a bunch of house shows in my time, and WWE house shows tend to be more silly, they're a lot of fun, and I have a feeling that Bayley and New Day probably kill it at a house show. They're probably going to be killing it week after week after week at house shows, and I want footage from those very shows because they're probably hilarious. We have Nia Jax versus a jobber. The jobber's promo seems like it was done in one take, and it needed maybe one more. We got a Let's Go Jobber chant. Nia wins. Duh. Duh. We have Anderson and Gallows. They're apparently opening up a retirement business. The dry delivery between the two is great. We have Nurse Dana Brooke coming out and snapping a glove on her hand. She seems very out of place, but also very welcome in a way. I don't know. Maybe it's because I just like seeing her dressed up as a nurse, and I'm okay with that, I guess. I mean, that's a less dignified part of me saying that. We have Jinder Mahal versus Sami Zayn. Sami sells the ankle perfectly. It seems to be a complete work, and I'm fine with that. Gives him something to do here. Sami Zayn wins. Duh. But what about Jinder Mahal? I bet he wishes he was on SmackDown. He would be used so much better on SmackDown. Like, seriously. We have a Lita interview with Sasha on the pre-show, and Sasha basically says, "I'm coming back." And we're all basically like, cool. Why is this a segment? This did not have to be a segment. Are you that desperate to fill time? Help me out here. Then we have Bayley and the New Day versus the Club and Dana Brooke. And I think it's a fine matchup. It's funny seeing the New Day working with Bayley. It makes me really happy. I could never get enough of these guys. Bayley is just the perfect amount of awkward that she can kind of pander to their gimmick and make it work. Like I said, they probably kill it at house shows. So if there's a Raw house show and Bayley and the New Day are advertised there, expect them to be fun. I really want Anderson and Gallows to have a run of dominance, but I don't see that happening anytime soon with how they've been booked. Bayley wins with the Bayley to Belly. At least Dana took the fall and it doesn't hurt the Club because they don't need to be taking any more L's. Anderson is too good to be losing to Kofi Kingston. I know Kofi is really good too, but Anderson is too fresh to be losing to Kofi Kingston. That's the thing. It bothers me so much that they're not booking these guys as strongly as they should, because they are really, really good. Cesaro cuts a promo basically saying nobody likes Sheamus. Basically, that's all we got. Sheamus versus Cesaro 2. Sheamus cuts a promo, concludes that the crowd is deaf because they can't stop shouting what? I don't know what's going on with them. I don't know how the crowd all went. I hate the what chant to a certain degree. It was fun at one point, but now it's just getting old. Now it's just like, hey, we're trying to hijack the show, and I have no problem with people saying what they want. I just don't think it does anybody any favors. It helped when it was Stone Cold's thing. There are some chants that just should die, and that might be one of them. Cesaro taps to Cloverleaf after hurting his back, which is really good storytelling, actually. I do enjoy this. Having Cesaro come up from behind, and this is, they're really probably going to cut this super close. They're definitely going to cut it down to the last one. I see Cesaro maybe getting a win in their next match, and then Sheamus winning again, and then Cesaro has to get all the wins from there. Something like that. I can imagine that. I can imagine Sheamus just going over in this program. I definitely could see it. I'm still waiting for them to announce it as a Loser Leaves Town program, but I don't know. Next, we have another jobber named Americo or Americano. I'm not sure. He's like an American luchador. So I guess instead of saying lucha, lucha, he'll be saying wrestle, wrestle. I'm stupid. I hate myself. Braun Strowman beats him and unmasks him, which I guess if you're going to have him face more jobbers, that's a nice touch to show how ruthless he is and how little he gives a fuck about you. I think that's decent. I mean, if you're going to have him face jobbers again, I was hoping he would be in the lower card at this point, beating up people like R-Truth. But if you're going to have him beat up jobbers, then that's fine, if as long as you do some storytelling while you do it. And having him unmask the jobber was definitely a nice little touch. The Cruiserweights arrive in 3 weeks. Excited for that. Stephanie McMahon comes out to address the Brock Lesnar situation. Steph. She says they are moments away from crowning the first ever Universal Champion. And that was not just a one-time mistake. Are you fucking kidding me, Steph? It's not a one-time mistake. She did it again in a backstage segment following this with Seth Rollins. Finn Balor. He won the match. He won the title. He relinquished the title because he had the title. He had to have won the title or he wouldn't be able to relinquish it because it wouldn't be his. It was his title. He relinquished it. He was the champion. You're not crowning the... Kevin Owens is not the first Universal Champion. Just because things didn't go how you wanted doesn't mean you can erase it. And if this is just incompetence here, then it's really bad incompetence because she's supposed to be in charge. She should know better than anybody who's at the top of her company at a given point. It hasn't been very long since Finn Balor relinquished the title. It was just last week. Is this some kind of joke? Are you kidding me? Okay, we're going to proceed. Paul Heyman comes out. Steph counters an ECW chant by reminding the fans that she purchased ECW. Pretty good. You can even see some of the fans that were chanting it in the crowd be like, okay, that was actually good. I'll let you have this one. It was kind of a funny moment. Heyman whips out a huge stack of $1 bills and starts paying the $500 fine in singles. Stephanie completely emasculates Paul. What a shock. Stephanie completely underselling anybody on the microphone. Isn't that great? Isn't that so Steph? Who else but Steph would completely undersell everybody? Who else has to get over on everybody? God damn it, Steph. God damn it. Next, we have another Titus O'Neil Darren Young match. Darren Young wins with a crucifix pin. Doesn't make him look strong. A photographer is probably pissed because his camera got broken on an Irish whip spot where Darren Young went over the top rope and landed on a cameraman, causing him to drop his camera. Man, it looked like it took a little bit of damage. That's probably going to cost a little bit of money. Poor guy. Titus O'Neil attacks Young, so this is still going on, I guess. And then we have a really cool moment, actually. It's weird. We have Seth coming back and talking to Stephanie McMahon. And it's weird. He's like, I'm going to make you proud, and has a genuinely sweet moment with her. And there was no punchline. His hug with her, it seemed really genuine, like he really wanted to make her proud, like he really cares about her. And it makes me wonder where Stephanie falls in with all this, because we've talked about the main event already. Stephanie seemed confused when Triple H came out. So is she going to be on Seth's side against Triple H, or is she going to reluctantly pick her husband? It's going to be interesting. Or is Triple H going to start running in on both shows and trying to pick their champions? That would be interesting. It would be another authority segment, but it would be interesting, I suppose. I really enjoyed this moment with Seth and Stephanie. It's weird how touching it was. There was no bullshit to it. And I think that was nice. I can't really complain about that all that much. This episode of Raw had some high moments, and then it had a lot of same old shit. The difference between Raw and SmackDown is that SmackDown may not have moments like the main event where everything was super high drama, but every segment on SmackDown tends to be pretty good. They don't have these low segments. They don't have the jobber matches, which I'm not against, but they're not exciting. They don't have Titus O'Neil and Darren Young. They don't have Jinder Mahal. They don't have a lot of these things that are really not all that interesting. These things that don't have a lot of stakes to it. They don't have characters like Neville who aren't doing dick. They don't have that because everything about their show is consistent throughout and they give everybody a certain degree of attention. Paul Heyman once told a story about when he ran SmackDown, when he was writing for SmackDown, and he would fight for time for characters like Jamie Noble and Nydia. He's saying, well, they're so great together. They need their time. They don't have a segment. What are we doing here? And I think that's kind of the nature that some of the SmackDown writers are taking. They're fighting for time for everybody. And they're giving everything something, the time and dedication it needs. They're giving stakes to lower card things while Raw kind of just throws them in to kill time. And it's going to be hard for Raw to compete in this case. Raw is putting up a good fight this week. But if SmackDown puts on another consistent show, it'll still overshadow a huge moment in my eyes. I mean, people will still be talking about how Raw ended, but which one would still end up being the better show? SmackDown would still be the better show because everything about it was good. It didn't have all the shitty moments in between that you had to sift through before you get to the really good moment. But who knows? SmackDown might be shit this week. Who knows? We'll see. I'm excited. I hope you're excited. So I will be giving you a SmackDown podcast. I don't know if it'll be out as early as usual. It might be out on Friday or maybe the weekend. And then beyond then, I'm probably going to be putting these all into a single episode throughout the week. And I guess that's probably the best way to do it. These have been getting longer. I've been finding more to say, and it's going to be hard to pick and choose between what I want to talk about. I'm going to have to really go through highlights, and that's going to be very difficult for me because I could talk about every segment if I really wanted to. I like doing this. We go 40 minutes on a single show. What are we going to do when we have to talk about two, three shows? And if I watch NXT that week, three shows. I don't know. We'll see. I'll definitely have plenty of material to cover at least. I'm excited for that. I hope you guys tune in. Check me out on all the sites I upload this on. Check me out on Facebook, Twitter, and that's all I got to say. Thank you guys for tuning in. I'll see you next time.